A few weeks ago, when we started going through the study for redemption, I thought about the book of Hoshea. It is Hoshea. It's not Hosea. It is not Jose. It is Hoshea. There is no Spanish name in the Bible. It is a Hebrew name. But the book of Hoshea has quite a bit in it about redemption. And I thought that that would be a good thing for us to look at in a sermon, looking at all of the things about redemption within the book. There's also a lot besides redemption within the book that we need to look at that goes along with that theme. But the theme really of the Old Testament book of Hoshea is redemption. This is the Hebrew, it's a little bit blurry, but this is the Hebrew writing of the name Hoshea. There are two different ways to pronounce it, actually. We won't get into all of that because it is not important to our theme this morning. There are three major problems that are going on with Israel at this time. We need to understand that the book was written for the people of Israel. And that is the northern kingdom. They were about to go into captivity because of the sins that they had been committing. You'll recall that the kingdom had split into the southern kingdom of Judah, the northern kingdom of Israel. The southern kingdom of Judah was kind of up and down on a roller coaster type of thing. Sometimes they were doing what they needed to be doing. They were following God. They had several kings that were very good kings and had reforms that they made, such as Hezekiah, such as Josiah especially. And they made good reforms. Then there were some kings that were very, 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 very bad within Judah. In Israel, right from the very beginning, when they split away, they never went back to following what God had laid out for his people. They began to worship idols. They fell into sinfulness. They never did get back out of that. And you'll find that every king that it mentions about Israel, after that first one where they split Rehoboam and Jeroboam, and you will find that every king of Israel after that, it says, he followed in the steps of Jeroboam, who caused Israel to sin. That was Jeroboam's legacy, who caused Israel to sin. Why? Because he put up idol worship houses, temples, within Dan and Beersheba, Bethel, rather. There were several others beyond that, but those were the two major ones. And in those two temples, he placed golden calves. And this was a common form of idol worship in Israel during this time period. But there are three major problems that are outlined within the book. First of all, there is no faithfulness. The people are not following the true God. They are not following Yahweh. Second of all, there is no loyalty or love. And thirdly, there is no knowledge or acknowledgement of God within the land. Sounds a little bit like today, doesn't it? And we find that as we go through both the major and the minor prophets, that that is the case many times. They are very contemporary books. They follow a lot of the same things that are going on today. History repeats itself. Some historical points to recognize within the book. As I said, it was written prior to 722. How do we know? Because that's when Israel actually fell, the northern kingdom. Ephraim is mentioned often within the book here. Ephraim is Israel. They took the largest tribe and began to call Israel after that largest tribe. Hoshea was told to marry a prostitute. This was to show the current state of God's relationship to his people. I often wonder what the elders would say here if I said, hey, you know what? God told me to go marry a prostitute. Wouldn't go over well today, but that's exactly what God told Hoshea to do, was to go and to marry a prostitute. Her name was Gomer. He was to go and to marry her. She cheated on him. Even after he married her, she still went to cheat on him. She went after men who gave her expensive gifts. And she went after those that she thought would be able to support her. Eventually, she was taken into slavery and sold again. And what happened? God told Hoshea to go and buy her back, even after she had cheated on him. There's even some indication by the children's names that one of the children that she had wasn't even Hoshi's to begin with. Not my son. And yet, God told Hoshi to go buy her back. Why? To exemplify redemption. The relationship of God to his people is shown also within this relationship between Hoshi and his wife Gomer. Because Gomer went after other men in the same way that God's people went after other gods. They went after the calf gods, for instance, the golden calves. They went after many other gods as well, those of the people that lived in the area. They went after the Moabite god. They went after the Ammonite god. It seems that any god that was out there that wasn't the true God, that's the one that they went after. And in the same way, they were prostituting themselves with other gods in the same way that Gomer prostitutes herself with other men. Children were born to this relationship. All of them had names that, again, illustrated God and his people, the relationship between God and his people. The cycle was illustrated in several ways throughout the book of unfaithfulness, discipline, and restoration. And that's the theme that we see throughout the book, the cycle that we see throughout the book. And it also pays us to behoove the idea that dispensationalists use this book. Dispensationalists are those who believe that the end times are all written throughout the book of Revelation. They believe in a secret rapture. They believe in a 1,000-year reign on earth, a tribulation period. All that you hear about, that's dispensationalism. Dispensationalists use this book extensively, and they use it wrongly. They misinterpret it to come up with their ideas. Hoshi's children, Jezreel, means Yahweh will destroy Jehu's line and all of Israel. Lo Ruhama means there is no love or pity. Yahweh will no longer have compassion on Israel or forgive her sins. In other words, punishment is coming. And Lo Ammi, which means not my people, not my son, or not my people, Yahweh has rejected the Israelites as his people. So these three children, the names that they had, exemplified the relationship that God had with his people. However, in chapter 3 and verse 1, as I said, after Gomer had gone after all these other men, after she had been taken back into slavery, and after she was again for sale, what happens? God tells Hoshi to go and to buy her back. And he says, it says, the Lord said to me, go show your love to your wife again, though she is loved by another man and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes. What does that mean, the sacred raisin cakes? Some people have seen that and they said, oh, well, we're not supposed to eat raisin cakes. Can we not go to tea houses and have raisin cakes? Raisin cakes we recognize from the Old Testament. It's mentioned several times throughout the Old Testament, Song of Solomon, and also throughout the Kings and 1 and 2 Samuel, and also 1 Chronicles. But we find there that David used raisin cakes after reestablishing worship as it was to be in the tabernacle. He handed out raisin cakes to the people, provided them with that. As a celebration. It is not wrong to eat raisin cakes. What it talks about here is saying that she loves the sacred raisin cakes, or the people also love the sacred raisin cakes. They were used also in the worship of idols, in the same way that they were used with the worship of the true God. Basically, raisin cakes at this time, they would have been something like chocolate that we have. They were high in energy, had some nourishment to them, but they were rich, and the people liked the taste of them. What it's talking about here when it says, love the sacred raisin cakes, they were a distraction. The people looked to that instead of looking to God. And so they loved this distraction of the idol worship that was going on at the time. It also says, though, they turned to gods. They turned to other gods. They turned to their idol gods. And what God is saying here is that in the same way that your wife loved other men, and the same way that you felt about that, is the same as when my people turn and love other gods. How she forgot that all, Gomer forgot, that all the things that she had were provided by Hoshi. They weren't provided by all these other lovers. She totally forgot that. And in the same way, God's people had forgotten that God, Yahweh God, had provided them with all the things that they had. And instead they turned and went after these other gods. They made trysts with other nations. They went to the other nations and asked them for protection. And so sometimes when the southern kingdom of Egypt was threatening, they went to the northern kingdom of Syria. And they looked for help from Syria. And when Syria was threatening, they went to Egypt. And they asked Egypt for help. And they didn't go to the true God who brought them out of Egypt. In fact, they would return to Egypt, as God says within this book. He says, when she goes after the other men, it is like when my people go after other gods. However, God still loves his people. As he says in the book of Isaiah, which we studied last, I hold out my arms to them all the day long. God was ready to support his people, to bring them back to him. And in fact, after the punishment that they will face, because of the sins that they had done here, reaping the whirlwind, he will take them back again and redeem them in the same way that he tells Hoshi here to redeem his wife. Redeem means to buy back. In chapter 8, verses 1 through 3, we see, set the shofar to your mouth. He shall come like an eagle against the house of the Lord, because they have transgressed my covenant and rebelled against my law. Israel will cry to me, my God, we know you. Israel has rejected the good. The enemy will pursue him. We see several things here that seem to look like today again as well. For instance, where it says here, he will come like an eagle. How quickly they had lost control here. It was slow at first, but then it began to pick up speed. And so we can see as well with us, it's the same type of thing. Getting into sin, the beginning of it, it's slow at first. You know, the first time it's really hard. And then the second time it's a little bit easier. And then it begins to pick up speed. And so it was the same way with Israel. First, the worshiping the other gods, well, it was just something they did a little bit on the side. Maybe the crops weren't growing too well, or things weren't going too well in the home. So they went to the people of the other lands that were around them, Moab and Ammon. And they said to them, what does your God do? How do we worship your God? And maybe this will help us, you know, along the way. And so they told them. And so they tried some of these things. And then they tried more. And then they went so far as to actually put the houses of these gods and the Ashtoreth, the groves of these gods and goddesses within their own land. And it wasn't just Israel. It went into Judah as well. And he mentions Judah several times within the book. But we find through archaeology that the golden calves have been dug up in Beersheba. That's Judah. And the Negev, again, that's Judah, not Israel. In Isaiah chapter 30, verses 9 and 10, this is a rebellious people, lying children, children who will not hear the law of the Lord, who say to the seers, do not see, and to the prophets, do not prophesy to us right things. Speak to us smooth things, prophesy deceits. These were the people that came to Isaiah, and they were also the people that came to Jeremiah. People that told them, don't prophesy what's right. Don't prophesy these things. Why? It's discouraging to the people. Say good things to the people. Build them up. This is something that we see today as well. You don't see preachers getting into the pulpit very often and talking about judgment and talking about sin and talking about how we are a broken people. This is not just about Gomer. We're Gomer. We've gone away from God as well. We have worshiped other gods. Maybe you don't bow down to the gods of the Old Testament, but do you bow down to the god of sleep, to the god of money, to the god of other people? There are many things that turn us away from the true God. And we, like Gomer, go after other gods. You don't see preachers talking about that too often today. They want to build people up, make them feel good about themselves. My friend Joel Osteen gets into pulpit and builds people up. He's more of a life coach, by the way, more than a preacher. Doesn't talk much about the Bible. I was given a chance for a position in Louisiana one time, one of the congregations there. And what they wrote to me was, we are looking for someone who will stand up and give about 10-minute lessons, which are full of things that will build people up. They didn't want to hear about judgment. I had another man tell me at a congregation where I preached in Kentucky, you can get everything that you need to say into about 15 minutes. I said, yeah, I could also eat at McDonald's every day, but I wouldn't be well nourished. You give 15-minute sermons, sound bites to people, they won't be well nourished in God's word. But this is what the people were looking for then, and it's what the people are looking for today. They also said, my God, we know you. We know the true God. How many people are saying that today as well? How many people do you go out to the street and say, do you believe in God? And they would tell you that they believe in God. Do they really? Why aren't they doing what he said to do? If you're not doing what God said to do, then you don't believe in God at all. Or you don't believe what he says. You don't believe that he's powerful, as he says he is. You don't believe that he truly created all the universe and everything that we see in it. Because if you believed that, then you would do the things that he says to do. So these people out on the street who say they believe in God. My God, we know you. That's what Israel was saying as well. Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 through 23. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. Many people today saying, Lord, Lord, they will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Will there be surprise or shock? Sounds like they were shocked here. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name and cast out demons in your name and done many wonders in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. These people are saying, we do all these things in the Lord's name. You see them on TV. Benny Hinn likes to go around. Actually, I think I may have heard that Benny Hinn has repented of some of that, so I'll take that back. I don't know where he's at now. But there are many out there who are like him. One just lost his show on TBN. Did you hear about that? They're going to put Stephen Furtick, he's the preacher over here at Elevation Church. They're going to put him on instead of, well, his name was there a minute ago. But he got up in the pulpit a few weeks ago and he blew. And he said he was blowing away the coronavirus. Also said that God wanted him to have another jet. He has 7 already. So this man is no longer going to be on TBN. He's lost his show They're going to put Stephen Furtick on instead. I'm not sure that's much better, to be honest with you. In chapter 8, they set up kings, but not by me. That's exactly what Israel did. God had said that Rehoboam was supposed to be the king. They went with Jeroboam instead. They split away. God still would have allowed that to some extent, but Jeroboam didn't follow the true God. And so they kept going with other kings after that who were never the king that God had said they were supposed to have. But not by me. They made princes, but I did not acknowledge them. From their silver and gold they made idols for themselves that they might be cut off. Your calf is rejected, O Samaria, the golden calf. My anger is aroused against them. How long until they attain to innocence? For from Israel is even this, a workman made it, and it is not God, but the calf of Samaria shall be broken to pieces. They found many of Israel's false idol God broken to pieces. This is a picture of that idol God, the bull of Samaria. They sow the wind and reap the whirlwind. What does that mean, to sow the wind and reap the whirlwind? We still have that phrase today. And it's really interesting how many of the phrases that we use today are actually found within the pages of the Bible. People don't recognize it came from the Bible. They sow the wind and reap the whirlwind basically is talking about sowing something that looks like a small thing. It becomes very, very large. And when they sow this sin, this careless sin, throwing it to the wind, they're going to reap a very large punishment for that. Israel went into captivity to Assyria, in 722 BC. The 10 tribes. Some people say they never returned. That's not really completely true. But many of them did not. The stalk has no bud, it shall never produce meal. If it should produce, aliens would swallow it up. In other words, they're having small crops. They would have understood this very well, what this meant. And if it does produce anything at all, if they do have any crops at all, it gets stolen by their enemies. Israel is swallowed up. Now they are among the Gentiles. That's exactly what happened to them. Like a vessel in which is no pleasure. For they have gone up to Assyria like a wild donkey alone by itself. Ephraim has hired lovers. They've gone to other people to protect them. Yes, though they have hired among the nations, now I will gather them. They shall sorrow a little because of the burden of the king of princes. Basically, they're going to sorrow some, but God says, I will gather them again. I will bring them back to their land. And he did. When we go into the New Testament, when you find those who say that the 10 tribes, that only two tribes returned, go into the New Testament, look up Anna, who was in the temple, find out what tribe she was from. It's one of those 10 tribes that they say disappeared and never returned. Because Ephraim has made altars for sin, they have become for him altars for sinning. I have written for him the great things of my law, but they were considered a strange thing. Are they not considered a strange thing today as well? Is it not considered strange not to go after your own pleasures? And we have people today who don't recognize reality and instead believe that they can mold reality for themselves and make that which is not real, real, because that's how they interpret it. Your interpretation, I wrote this morning on Facebook, your interpretation doesn't matter. What matters is the truth. What matters is reality. It's our responsibility to find that out. They consider this a strange thing. For the sacrifices of my offerings, they sacrifice flesh and eat it, but the Lord does not accept them. They were doing human sacrifice. Now he will remember their iniquity and punish their sins. They shall return to Egypt, for Israel has forgotten his maker and has built temples. Judah also has multiplied fortified cities. But I will send fire upon his cities, and it shall devour his palaces. Judah was not left out here, because God looked upon Judah as well. And really, he says in some of the other prophets, what happened to Israel was supposed to be an object lesson to Judah. And he said, you saw what happened to your sister, and you still continued in your sin of worshiping the false gods. And Judah, of course, also eventually paid the price for that. They also reaped a whirlwind to Babylon. But God says, I will ransom them from the power of the grave. I will redeem them from death. In Hoshea chapter 13 and verse 14. And chapter 14 is all about that redemption. O Israel, return to the Lord your God, for you have stumbled because of your iniquity. Iniquity will cause us to stumble in our walk, in our lives. Take words with you and return to the Lord. Say to him, take away all iniquity. Receive us graciously, for we will offer the sacrifices of our lips. Assyria shall not save us. We will not ride on horses, nor will we say any more to the work of our hands, you are our gods. For in you the fatherless finds mercy. They have become fatherless because they had gone after these other gods who were not gods. They said to the work of their hands, you are our gods. But they were not gods. They had made them themselves. Isaiah talks of the folly of this. He says a woodsman goes to the field. He takes a log. He cuts it in half. With half he bakes his bread. And with the other half he takes and fastens gold and silver upon it and fastens it to a wall and kneels down and prays to it as though it is his God. And the idea is left to us, what if you burn the wrong half? Who is wise? Let him understand these things. Who is prudent? Let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right. The righteous walk in them, but transgressors stumble in them. Those who are bent on following destruction, bent on following sin, they're going to stumble because of the law of the Lord. But those who are trying to follow the right thing, looking to God to guide them, they will be able to be upheld. The righteous walk in them. Look through the book of Psalms. See how many times it says there that the psalmist is trying to walk in the Lord. And we also, in this time, walk in the Lord. Maybe we don't follow the Old Testament law, like the psalmist was talking about. But we do follow the things that God has laid out for us. In Ephesians chapter 4, it tells us to walk worthily of the calling with which you are called. You ever hear of the father who says to his children, remember who you are? God is constantly saying to us, remember who you are. And remember that though you have stumbled and fallen away from that which God has called you to, you can always return. God has set redemption for us. He set his son, who has paid the full price for our sins. And all we need to do is to return to him and walk worthily of the calling which with we are called.